You're listening to Speak Free with Simon O'Connor, right here on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Well, amongst the big news this week has been the very sad sinking of His Majesty's New Zealand ship, or the HMNZS Manawanui, on a reef in Samoa. And naturally, there's lots of questions and concerns. But I thought it would be really good if we talked to someone who's pretty much an expert and knows all about this vessel and what it does and what will be going through the crew's mind. So I'm joined now by Ron Mark. He is the mayor of Carterton at the moment. But really importantly for this chat, he's a former Minister of Defence in the government, of course, a colleague of mine and someone who treated me very well. Ron, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good to hear from you, Simon. Yeah, good to be on the show. Thank you.
I remember the Manawanui very clearly because you kindly arranged a visit for me and others, I think, at its commissioning or around the time. And I found it an amazing ship, and now exceptionally saddened to see it effectively at the bottom of the ocean. But tell listeners about this vessel, because you were critical. You were the person who basically got it sorted. So tell us all about the Manawanui.
Yeah, well, I always refer to the Manawanui as having been one of those visionary and quite an eloquent solution to a quite a serious problem that we had at the time, that we couldn't, from a military perspective, afford to fix. We had lost HMNZS Resolution, which was our survey ship. We had lost HMNZS Manawanui, the earlier dive ship. So with the decommissioning of Manawanui, we had no dive, no survey capability. And we were in need of a littoral vessel anyway, and there was money set aside for that. But unfortunately, a huge slice of that money had to be diverted for the frigate systems upgrade because, for one reason or another, people had mucked around, and a project that should have been kicked off back in 2007 was still languishing when I took over as the minister in 2017 and had become $140 million dearer because of the time delays and such. So we had to rob Peter to pay the FSU, and we took money out of that, and we were left with about 100 mil to find a solution. Talking with our MOD team, and we came up with quite an eloquent proposition, that was to go out and look for a oil exploration, a hydrographic ship that we knew would have dive capability and we knew could also do surveying, charting, mapping of the seabed, and have a look at those and see if they could fit the bill, recognising that they were, one, yes, cheap, being second-hand, relatively cheap, but two, were not warships and were not designed for military combat operations at all. They were defenceless. But then, you know, we struck upon Edifon, and everything we looked at from the Edifon told us that, hey, actually, this could work. And so the Ministry of Defence team, our Defence Force team, people in my office really cracked into it. And once I kicked it off, and we put up a paper and got Cabinet to agree to agree to the business case. We then finally to purchase the vessel, we locked that down and we got her. The great thing about Edifon, which was then recommissioned as HMNZS Manawanui, was her ability to do a multitude of tasks, not just mapping in absolute detail the seabed and the floor, but also doing recovery and salvage operations. And anyone knows anything about oil exploration and the hydrographic ships they use knows that they are kitted for divers. They're designed to sit above an object and hold in a static position. For this particular vessel in North Sea sea states, and put divers down under to work. We noticed also that with the large deck, she had the ability to carry containers. We also, she had the lily pad out front so you could land helicopters on her. Very well appointed inside and quite luxurious by Navy standards, I have to say.
That's my memory of it. It's like, wow, this is a really flash ship.
And a huge bridge, you'll recall that. I mean, you turn it into a dance floor inside of that. I remember their highly polished wooden floor and how massive the bridge was. But the ability to sit in position and hold position over a single point to an accuracy of about 1 square meter was something phenomenal. But as things went on, you could see that it could be utilized in littoral operations by launching other vessels. And she deployed on a range of tasks and became a bit of a go-to ship for humanitarian assistance, disaster relief. And she became, she was absolutely perfect for locating and disposing of explosive remnants from the war, something she did up in the Solomons. I think it was in Solomons area she was tasked to do some of that work. So, yeah, she'd spent about 100 days at sea during COVID. I think she earned that nickname, the Swiss Army Knife of the Royal New Zealand Navy, because there were just so many different things she was able to do. She was a good backup and a good alternative to Canterbury, not able to lift as much as Canterbury, but she had that versatility to be at least able to carry some stuff, and particularly, which was particularly useful for HADAR operations. So dive ship, survey ship, mapping, charting, salvage, HADAR, explosives, recovering and disposal of submerged or sunken explosive remnants, search and rescue, all of those things. She was a very useful ship.
She was incredibly, incredibly versatile. And it also had the hyperbaric chamber or chambers on it too, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely right, which is essential if you, that's pretty much standard for a lot of oil exploration and hydro dive ships. You've got to have that facility there when you're putting divers down that deep. Had the ability to drop a bell down, the ability to drop an ROV out the side, sling it out over the side of the ship and lower it down. The dive bell went down through the center of the ship. You remember that well?
I do.
Drop straight into the ocean from inside the ship. I mean, it gave our awesome Navy divers a facility the like of which they had never seen before.
Quite unnerving for listeners to understand, literally in the middle of the ship as a whole. It's like, oh, okay. Just quickly, you mentioned HADAR, just so people understand. You just mentioned HADAR. A lot of listeners won't know what that acronym stands for, Ron. Do you want to enlighten them?
Mm. Yeah, humanitarian assistance, disaster relief. I mean, if you've got a ship that can go out and complement Canterbury that's deploying to assist, in times of cyclones, tsunamis or whatever, a ship that carries a crane that can lift 100 ton from it, and that's why it's, so useful for salvage. I'm trying to remember the stats off the top of my head. I think it's a 2 kilometre depth. 100 ton it could pull up, something of that region. So I jokingly said to cabinet ministers, if you're flying into Wellington and your plane goes down, we'll be able to pull it up and get your body back to your whānau. And
I'm sure cabinet loved you.
Military humour. Military humour's a bit lost on some people, but hey, it's true. It could do that sort of work. So humanitarian assistance, disaster relief, she was a good complement to the rest of the fleet in that space, and the ability to land a helicopter on the lily pad at the out front made it, that much more versatile as well.
So it definitely was, as you say, a military vessel, and so far it was commercial, it was inducted into our military, but you've stressed a couple of times it's not a warship, and it's probably good to draw that out because some people are saying, oh, it's a warship and it's been sunk and how ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, you know, you've got to forgive people for being ill-informed, and people don't know what they don't know till they know the difference. And but, you know, if it is a hydrographic, it was a hydrographic dive survey ship, that's what it did. It's a commercial vessel. We bought it from Norwegian, from an oil exploration company. Its name was Edifon. It was built in Norway for this work, commercial work. You know, warships have redundancy and resilience built all through them. It's core to the design, the ability to replace a system or operate a system through an alternate mechanism when you take damage is fundamental to the survivability of any warship and its ability to continue function and performing its role. The ability to seal off compartments and retain buoyancy and to limit water ingress. And I'm not a sailor, so forgive me if I'm using the wrong nautical terminology, but I do know that, yeah, you can seal off those warships, and you can allow some areas to be flooded while you keep other areas watertight. Commercial vessels, not necessarily of this type, not necessarily the same, and the ship, not the same. And so those things would have been cost an absolute fortune to build into it. So we took it on board knowing that it had a specific role that it would perform. It was never going to be armed in the way that a warship was going to be. It would never have the armor that a warship would have. It would never have redundancy systems to guarantee, to improve survivability in such a circumstance as she finally found herself in, like a warship.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really designed for
but it wasn't going to be deployed into that role. That was not the purpose for her. Yeah.
You'd mentioned, Ron. Yeah, well, I think it's good you stress that. As you say, it wasn't designed for war fighting. It had other purposes. But thinking out of the ship's company, as you say, you're not a Navy man. You're a former infantry major, wasn't it? So you're an Army officer.
Well, I was an Army officer. I started out as an Army mechanic, actually. Worked my way through and then did a whole bunch of stuff. So as a becoming a mechanical engineer, I understand a certain amount in the Navy, in the maritime and aeronautical space, just naturally because it's all engineering and maintenance and repair concepts and systems are very similar regardless of which particular discipline you study. But I started in that area, and then I went off and did other things and got commissioned and did other things and learned how to jump out of aeroplanes and do funny stuff, and spent a bit of time as an infantry officer and as a platoon commander of an infantry battalion for a wee while, and went off and did other things. But most military people have a speciality, and my speciality was mechanical engineering.
So obviously with that service, though, I mean, what will be going through the minds of the ship's company? Again, they're Navy, you were Army, but I mean, this must be hitting pretty hard for those personnel on board.
Yeah, I guess one of the things that stands out for me, Simon, is that, look, as much as we soldiers, pride ourselves on being a tight-knit unit, whether you're part of a supply company, a transport company, or an armored squadron, or an infantry battalion, or infantry company, platoon or section, we pride ourselves on being very tight-knit and, brothers, sisters in arms, and, one for one, all for all, look after each other to the death. And I mean, in those circumstances, literally. I guess the thing I've learned about the Navy is that, these men and women go to sea, and in that case for Manawanui for that particular period, for 100 days at sea, on board a tin can that floats on a massive ocean that occupies, in New Zealand's case, 11% of the planet's surface. And they will go anywhere, anytime to do any task they're sent to do. And, of course, they are always acutely aware, whether they're in the Southern Ocean or up in the Pacific cruising around the islands, that the ocean can be a perilous place to be if things are going wrong. And so I always, have respect for sailors. They have a camaraderie of their own. They're a very tight-knit team. They have to be. They live in very confined spaces. They work as a tight team. They have to be prepared to take Mother Nature head-on at her worst. grunts just dig a hole and pull our heads and
I can't imagine
what it's like facing, you know, 10, 15 meter waves, you know, in really, really rough sea conditions. But that's their environment. So they're close, you know, and of all the crews that I spent time with, whether it was Canterbury, Te Kaha, Te Mana, Manawanui, Aotearoa, they're tight and they look after each other, you know. They're prepared to bleed and die for each other. So something like this and losing their ship, this, and, you know, and having to disembark or abandon ship, you know, it's one thing to do the drills and go through the motions. It's another thing when it's real and it's in the middle of the night and it's in tricky sea state. And to be able to complete that, knowing that you might lose people, you could well lose people, not knowing until you're all ashore and the head count's been done is that all your mates are there, you've all survived. Yeah, that would have had a very strong impact on all of them, and I would not underestimate, you know, the amount of care and support that's going in from Navy now to look after their team, because they'll be feeling it. Once the shock wears off and they start thinking about what could have been, even though it wasn't, they all did survive, and you know, it was a good call, timely call, the appropriate call. They will be thinking about it now, and so that shock and that trauma will be there. But on top of that, they will be known they've got to pull their socks up, buckle up, get back into the job, whatever job they're reassigned to now, they'll have to do, and then they'll have to deal with whatever questions they might individually or collectively be asked to answer during the Court of Inquiry. So it's going to be a tough time for them, Simon. It's going to be a tough time.
Massively so.
And I, you say, you know, I feel I really... You're there.
Sorry, Ron. Yeah, no, I interrupted you. Yeah, I was just going to say we can be grateful they all survived. I mean, that's a mercy there with all that was happening. But as you say, there's a lot more to go through now. And even as you say, just as the days pass and they reflect on what's happened, the shock wears off.
Yep.
It's going to be quite the journey for them.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, so, you know, anyone who's deployed operationally and been places, you know that sort of stuff. So, you know, their officers, their warrant officers, they'll be watching out for their people, looking after their people, and they will need to because, you know, they've got a bit to go through. You know, so that'll be primary concern, but at the same time, you know, further up the chain, people will be looking at the issues that now have to be dealt with that will arise from the very fact that Manawanui's laying on the bottom and she's got, you know, I don't know how many thousand litres of diesel or oil and whatever that has to be, you know. And you've got Samoan government, it's their waters, their territorial waters, their sovereign waters. So it'll be them that New Zealand will have to, you know, be answering to, and you know. So
yeah, well, oil's leaking, so there's an environmental side to consider. I mean, final question then for you, Ron, because I mean, obviously there's a court of inquiry, so we're not going down the speculation role. But does New Zealand, and again, I'm asking as a former defence minister, will we have to replace this ship? Is this a capability we can't do without? Maybe that's a better way to phrase the question.
Well, I would say it is a capability you can't do without. That's why we pulled all the stops out to replace, you know, to replace the old Manawanui and Resolution as swiftly as we could. That's why we took this option. The deduction then was we have to keep this capability. You've got not only are the tasks that need to be performed, but there's a capability that has to be maintained. There's divers that have skills and abilities that need to be taught, tested, maintained, and deployed to in order to keep people current. Doesn't take long to lose currency and to lose expertise and to lose personnel if you can't deploy the capability or don't deploy it or won't deploy it. So I would argue it has to be replaced. The question for the government is, given all their stated priorities to date, how much flexibility have they got to pivot and move swiftly? You know, it's going to be one of those questions where the Minister of Defence is going to have to put up a case and an argument, and between the Prime Minister and Minister. And don't ever underestimate the value of this capability in terms of foreign policy and to the Minister of Foreign Affairs, who's always, as you know, Simon, has always focused very, very strongly and very, very determinedly on keeping strong, solid relationships and support to the Pacific Island community of nations. This ship, along with Canterbury and the IPVs, OPVs were fundamental in that, but this ship in particular, because of its dive, hydro, salvage capabilities, HADAR capabilities, I would argue is an essential ship to have in the fleet.
Absolutely.
The question is, how quickly do they agree? And if they do, what are they going to do about it? Because, you know, there'll be other ships like this out there on the market. Just go find one.
They might need to give you a call, Ron, and tap that experience, because actually I'm with you. It's a capability we need. It's going to be a big challenge for that government. But Ron, thank you so much for calling in and talking us through this. As I say, you are so critically involved in acquiring this vessel into our Navy, and you know it inside out. So just really appreciate you taking the time to talk us through everything you know there.
Absolute pleasure, Simon. Really good to talk to you again, mate. It's good to catch up.
A pleasure. So everyone, that was Ron Mark, the former Minister of Defence and currently the Mayor of Carterton.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.